Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 257 in the series. It's February 11, 2018, and so this is our Valentine's show, Lisa. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, Carl.
What's next week sometime, right?
It's on Wednesday.
Is it? It's on Wednesday?
Yeah,
wow.
What are you going to do for that special someone?
I don't know.
You're going to pull out that My Pillow?
Sends me.
break I like out. Chocolate.
Yeah.
I do too.
Maybe I'll be able to break the glass on the My Pillow. Yeah. Wouldn't that be something?
Oh, that's right.
It's kind of like
yeah.
a Beauty and the Beast thing. You know how he keeps the flower in the
I have a hammer
the
next to the glass.
In the case.
You never know. It just...
All right. Well, good luck to you. You got 3 days to figure it out.
Oh, man. And you know what? Roger would know this. Jack Benny's birthday was Valentine's Day.
That's right. Yeah.
So we have a Jack Benny birthday episode.
Oh, fantastic.
Did you expect anything less
from
us, Roger?
Not.
And
of
you know what
not.
Else?
But it's just nice to be reassured.
And because it's President's Day this week,
oh, that's right.
we
yeah.
are going to celebrate Abe Lincoln, the greatest president of all time.
Are you going to chop a log or something?
Chop a log.
No, I'm not going to chop any logs.
You're going to go stay in a log cabin or something?
No, but we are going to play a radio dramatization of Abe Lincoln in Illinois, starring Ooh. Raymond Massey, who played Abe Lincoln, in an hour-long Lux Radio Theater broadcast from 1940. So that's our lineup. We'll be here till 2 a.m., and we are going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. Lisa, what is the movie?
The movie for hour one is Toy Story.
Toy Story.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you can call us now, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
They are going to win two tickets to Buffalo Theater Ensemble's performance of Time Stand Still.
You can go see a good play,
yes.
right? 312-981-7200. Let's take our third caller. We'll play the game. Then we'll play Jack Benny after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
I just love that Roger's our announcer for Crack the Quote. The movie is Toy Story. I have three quotes, one of which is actually from the movie Toy Story. The other two are not. And we have Pierre on the line to help us out. Hi, Pierre.
Hey, how you all doing?
So good. Thank you so much
Pierre.
Calling in, and we're so glad to have you play with us.
Thank you. I'm happy to play.
Thank you. So I'm going to list them off, and then you tell me which is the right one from Toy Story. Number one is, you're doomed to be a hand-me-down. Number two is, you're a toy, you're not real, get over it. Number three is, you are a child's plaything, you are a sad, strange little man.
Hmm. What do you think, Pierre?
I'll take number two.
You're a toy. You're not real. Get over it. Carl.
I am not going to agree with Pierre. I'm
okay.
sorry, Pierre. I'm going to say numero uno.
Number one, you're doomed to be a hand-me-down.
All right, let's
okay,
see.
Okay, Shantae.
You are a child's plaything.
You are a sad, strange little man.
So I'm so happy that I stumped you both. Not so much for you, Pierre, but I'm really happy to stump Carl. So.
We both got stumped, Pierre.
We did. I'm so sorry. But
yeah,
you know what? It was a good guess.
I
made it difficult. But you are still a winner. So you have still won two tickets to Buffalo Theater Ensemble's performance of Time Stand Still. It's playing through March 4th at the Mac Theater on the College of DuPage. It is Tony Award nominated for Best Play. You can get tickets at themac.org. Thanks a lot for calling in, Pierre, and for playing the game with us.
All right. Thank you so much.
There
Goodbye.
You go, buddy.
Take care.
All right. So, Lisa Wolf, you stumped me again.
I'm smiling ear
to
ear.
You are really, really
tough. I'm a good stumper.
You are good at this game.
Yeah, I know.
Man. All right. Well, we have a text in line, folks. It is 312-981-7200. Text us here at the Igloo Studio. We are at the Igloo Studio on 435 North Michigan Avenue. Yeah, it's about 30 below zero. The heat is out.
Apparently, the heat's broken.
Yeah.
So we are wearing coats and hats.
We're all bundled up.
To stay warm. So if you're able to watch us here, you'll see us looking like we're outside playing in the snow.
By about 1:30, we will probably, our mouths will be frozen closed from this. It's so cold in here.
It's really cold.
I have a hat on, a coat on.
I know, me too. So we're layering up.
All right, text us 312-981-7200. It's time for the Jack Benny program. We are going to celebrate his birthday because his birthday was February 14th. So we have two birthdays we're celebrating, Jack Benny and Abe Lincoln.
It's a lot to keep track of.
Let's go back to his birthday of February 14th, but 1954 of the date. Here is part one of the Jack Benny program.
The Jack Benny program, transcribed. Starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, today, February 14th, is Valentine's Day. It's also the birthday of the star of our show. So here he is, our own little Valentine, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, that was very nice of you to remember my birthday. How did you ever think of it?
Well, Jack, a strange thing happened last night. I ate at that Chinese restaurant you recommended.
Uh-huh.
And I broke open one of those rice fortune cakes.
Uh-huh.
And a little paper said, 'Tis better to give than to receive, and Sunday is Jack Benny's birthday.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you bring me for a present, Don?
Well, it was too late to go shopping, so I brought you a pocket full of fried rice.
Too late to go shopping. I told you to have lunch there, not dinner. Anyway, Don, I'll take the rice. There's a friend of mine getting married Wednesday.
Jack, you can't throw this rice. It's fried.
So's my friend. It's Remley. Anyway, Don, thanks very much.
Well, anyway, Jack, getting back to your birthday, tell me, how does it feel being a year older?
Don, I don't know. It seems strange to advance another year, but then on the other hand, there's something exciting about reaching 40. Yes, sir. You know?
Jack, you may be 40, but I must say you look much younger.
Well, Don, it's nice of you to say that, but let's face it. My age is beginning to show. A little wrinkle here, a gray hair there. Eh. Time marches on. Now, let's get on with the program.
Oh, wait a minute, Jack. Before we get into the show, I have a little surprise for you.
A surprise, Don?
Yeah, the whole audience is going to join in. All right, everybody.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, everybody. Thanks very much.
Wasn't that nice, Jack?
Yes, very nice, Don. But,
But what?
Well, I was watching one fellow sitting in the front row, and he didn't sing at all. As a matter of fact, he had a frown on his face. And I'm just curious to know why. Oh, Mister?
Me?
Yeah, would you mind coming up here on the stage for a minute?
Okay.
Now, look, Mr.
Fink. F-I-N-Q-U-E, Fink.
Oh, well, Mr. Fink, I'm just curious to know, you were the only one who didn't sing Happy Birthday to me. Why was that?
Do you sing to me on my birthday?
No, but then how can I? I don't even know when your birthday is.
It's December the 24th, and all you hear people singing is Jingle Bells, Jingle Bells, Jingle All. Not one word about Frank.
Well, that's too bad. Now, look, Mr. Fink.
F-I-N-Q-U-E.
I know.
That's French.
Yes.
In Paris, it's Fink.
Well, you certainly are. And I don't care what it is. All I want to know is if you've got this chip on your shoulder, why did you come in here in the first place?
Who wanted to come in? I was standing in line for the Amos and Andy show. And some guy come over and he told me they was giving away refrigerators in here.
Giving away refrigerators?
In radio, a program's either got to give you entertainment or a refrigerator. Now, where's my icebox?
You're not getting an icebox, so go sit down.
Okay. 12 programs this week. I still ain't got a stick of furniture.
Keep quiet, please, Mr. Fink. Now, Don, regardless of what just happened, Oh, hello, Dennis. You're just in time for your song.
Oh, I'd have been here sooner, but on the way down, I had to stop off at our family doctor's office and punch him in the nose.
You punched your doctor in the nose?
He had it coming. My mother told me what he did.
What?
Well, when I was born, for no reason at all, he slapped me.
Dennis.
And my back was turned, too.
Dennis, never mind that silly talk. Let's have your song.
Okay, Mr. Benny, but first, congratulations on your birthday.
Oh, well, it's awfully sweet of you to remember it, kid.
I never would have thought of it if you hadn't given me that ticket to the burlesque show last night.
Never mind, Dennis.
What'd the burlesque show have to do with it?
Well, a girl came out to do a dance, her bubble broke, and a sign fell out saying, Sunday is Jack Benny's birthday.
Dennis.
You must be popular. What applause you got.
All right.
They whistled and everything. Dennis, what a fuss over a man's birthday.
Look, Dennis, you found out it was my birthday. That's all that matters. Now, come on, let's have your song.
Okay. Gee, when I'm 40, I hope I don't look like him.
What did you say?
Sing, Dennis.
You said it.
Secret love that lived within the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became impatient to be free. Friendly star, the way that dreamers often do, just how wonderful you are, and why I'm so in love with you. At last, my heart's an open door, and my secret love's no secret
Secret Love, sung by Dennis Day. Very good, Dennis. That was wonderful.
Congratulations on your birthday.
Dennis, you congratulated me already. Forget it.
I tried, but I can't get that bubble dancer out of my mind.
Force yourself.
Well, you know, Mr. Benny, it must be nice to have your birthday come on Valentine's Day.
Yes, kid, but there's only one thing against it.
Yeah?
I mean, so many famous people were born in the month of February. Longfellow, Lincoln, Washington. It makes it hard for me to be outstanding.
I can imagine.
Of course, I don't want you to think for a minute that I'm comparing myself to a man like Washington.
Why not? He wore a wig, too.
Very clever, very clever. Did you make up that joke yourself, Dennis?
Uh-huh.
And you like that type of joke?
Yeah, I thought it was very funny.
Oh, you did? You thought it was funny, huh? Well, excuse me a minute. Hello? Kenny Baker? Come home, all is forgiven. You better watch it, Dennis. Another gag like that, and you'll only have one show. And another thing.
Say, Jack.
Yes, Bob?
Well, look, I didn't want to interrupt anything, but I've got a little present for you from the boys in the band.
Oh, well, this is really too much. To think that the boys in your orchestra would remember my birthday. I mean, with all their other worries and responsibilities.
Well, Remley was the one.
Oh, Remley, huh?
Uh-huh. Funny thing happened. Last night, Frankie was in a bar, and he happened to look up, and he saw a little sign that said, "Tomorrow is Jack Benny's birthday."
Bob, that was written on the ceiling?
No, under the table.
I put it there on purpose. I knew he'd see it.
All right, that's the first portion of the Jack Benny program from broadcast date of February 14th, 1954. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, after the news, we'll come back, tune into the conclusion to the Jack Benny birthday show. Then we're going to begin an hour-long Lux Radio Theater presentation of Abe Lincoln in Illinois, starring Raymond Massey. He played Abe Lincoln in the film, and I believe he was nominated for an Academy Award for it.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hey, Roger, hear that? You hear that?
Yeah, it's your teeth chattering.
That's my knees knocking.
Yeah, I figured something was making noise there. How cold is it?
It's so cold. Man. Well, Lisa can't talk because her lips are glued together.
They're blue.
Yeah.
From the cold.
You know, I wish I had enough coats to keep myself warm in the studio, Roger.
It didn't work. You didn't bring it up.
We have hats on. We have gloves on.
How prophetic was I when I made that post earlier today about how many
If anybody was not understanding, because Carl's looking at me like I'm crazy. Roger made this great post.
I'm not looking at you like you're crazy.
Well, you always do, so this is nothing new. Roger's got a great Facebook post, which is just his inner monologue kind of thing, right, Roger?
Yeah,
just
pretty much.
So anyhow, it was about one of the observations was about me not being able to have enough coats to bring to the studio to keep myself warm.
Yeah, true.
Well, hang on. Hang on, if we don't get this show on, it's the midnight hour, and
we got to get
the commercials in.
Yeah.
Sorry, we'll chat a little later. Let's get back to the Jack Benny program.
Anyway, Jack, all the boys chipped in, and they appointed Bagby the piano player to go out and buy you a plaque, and they asked me to present it to you. So, Jack, on behalf of the boys in the orchestra, here you are.
Well, that's very nice of them. Gee, it's a fancy plaque, too. Let me read the inscription. To Herman Heffelfinger, champion bowler, anthracite miners tournament. Bob, what's the matter with Bagby? I mean, why would he get me a plaque like that?
Well, you don't have much choice when you deal with a second story man.
Wait, you mean Charlie buys stolen merchandise?
Well, sometimes he buys, sometimes he sells.
I can't understand Bagby. There are so many decent, honest businessmen around. Why does Charlie have to buy from a burglar?
He gives green stamps.
Well, Bob, I'm not accepting a hot plaque.
Happy birthday, Mr. Benny.
Huh?
That bubble dancer is driving me nuts.
Dennis, go sit down. Now, let's get on with the program.
Oh, say, Jack, before you go any further, I think it's time for a song by the quartet.
Oh, yes, that's right. Are the sportsmen here?
Yeah.
Come on in, fellas.
Jack, the boys want to dedicate this number to you on the happy occasion of your birthday because this song's been associated with you for years.
Well, that's very nice, Don.
And, Jack, there's a part in it where you play the violin right at the opening.
Oh, Don, do I have to?
No.
Well, I'm going to. It's my birthday. Now, wait till I get the music stand up here. Say, Bob, can I get a violin from one of the boys in the band?
Well, I don't know about a violin, but Bagby will make you a good deal on a hot Cadillac.
I don't want that. I want a violin. Larry, let me have your violin, will you? Thanks. What a gang in the orchestra. When they say that Remley is playing a steel guitar, you can take that word either way. Where's that violin? All right, Don, I'm ready. You want me to take the opening, huh? Swell, boys. Thanks very much. You know, Don, it was so nice of the quartet. Come in.
Telegram for Jack Benny.
Oh, here I am, boy. Yeah. I hear, boy, here's a tip for you.
Oh, boy, a dollar. A whole dollar. Thanks, Mr. Benny.
I wonder who could be sending me a telegram right in the middle. Come in.
Excuse me, Mr. Benny.
What do you want now?
I forgot my bicycle.
You didn't forget it. I bought it. Now, goodbye. I hate when a guy makes a deal and then tries to get out of it. Gee, the telegram's from my sister, Florence.
Oh, what did she say?
She says, Dear Jack, I've been listening to your program, and I thought I should send you this wire immediately. You're not 40 years old today. You're actually... Oh, no. No, this can't be. This is awful.
Well, Jack, how old does your sister say you are today?
39. Oh, my goodness, this is embarrassing. But my sister Florence ought to know. I guess instead of being born in 1914, it was 1915. I'm going to call Rochester and have them look at my birth certificate. My sister Florence says I'm 39, and I think I'm 40. I got to find out.
Say, Mabel. What is it, Gertrude? Mr. Benny's line is flashing. Yeah, I wonder what Collier's cover girl wants now. I'll plug in and find out. Yes, Mr. Benny. I'll call your house immediately. He wants I should get him Rochester. Well, be nice to him. You know, today's his birthday. It is? How did you find out? Dial Ulrich 8900. Yeah, but how did
dial,
you...
Dial!
Okay.
The time is 4:21 and 10 seconds. And today is Jack Benny's birthday. The time is 4:21 and 20 seconds. His shirt size is 15 and a half. The time is...
How do you like that? Imagine Benny having his birthday announced on the telephone. How does he get away with it?
He used to be a personal friend of Alexander Graham Bell.
See? But with all the advertising, he must be getting a lot of gifts.
I can imagine. What did you send him?
A beautiful calfskin glove.
One glove? Why in the world would you give him only one glove?
That's all he needs. He never takes his right hand out of his pocket.
Very true. Say, Gertrude, can you give me a lift home tonight?
I guess so. What's wrong?
I got another flat tire.
See, you've been having more trouble with that motorcycle.
Yeah.
Operator. Gertrude, get me my home.
I'm trying. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Well, you ought to know. You helped build it.
Well, thank you, Julius Caesar.
Never mind. Now, please ring my home.
Okay, I'm ringing it.
Smart aleck, Gertrude. She takes you out for dinner once. She thinks she owns you. Oh, well.
Mr. Benny's residence, star of stage, radio, television, and silent pictures.
Rochester, it's me.
Oh, hello, boss.
What took you so long to answer the phone?
Well, today's your birthday, and I was out in the kitchen finishing your cake.
Oh, you baked a cake for me?
Yeah, and you ought to see it, boss. Across the top in whipped cream, I wrote, Happy Birthday.
Oh, that's nice, Rochester.
By the way, how many peas in happy?
Two.
Uh-oh.
Oh, so you'll have to add one.
I gotta take one off. I got three.
Well, look, you can do that later. Now, Rochester, here's why I called you. I don't know what to do. I thought today was my 40th birthday, but I just got a wire from my sister, and she says I'm 39.
Well, don't argue with her, boss. Grab it.
Rocha, I got to be honest with myself. Now, I want you to look at my birth certificate and tell me the date on it.
Your birth certificate?
Yes, do you know where it is?
It's right here on the desk.
What's my birth certificate doing on the desk?
You got it out the other day when you applied for your old age pension.
I just did that for a gag.
Well, it must be laughing. Your first check came today.
Rochester, stop making things up. Now look at my birth certificate.
I'm looking at it.
Now in the space where it says date of birth, what's there?
A hole.
A hole in the paper?
Yeah, we erased it once too often.
Oh, well, then there's nothing I can do, and I'll have to take my sister's word for it.
I guess so, boss. Your sister must be right.
Yep, I guess I'm 39. Well, goodbye, Rochester.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
What?
Aren't we devils?
You and me?
No, me and your sister.
Yeah, goodbye, Rochester. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not the only one who's celebrating a birthday. Last week, more than 3,300,000 scouts and leaders of the Boy Scouts of America had a candle lighting job on their hands. It was the beginning of Boy Scout Week, and these scouts added the 44th candle to their birthday cake. Candles that, through the years, have lighted boyhood's path to manhood, brightening the way with fun and fellowship, guiding boys to a future of good citizenship. And ladies and gentlemen, today's scouts are tomorrow's citizens. Thank you. Come on, Don. The car's right around the corner. I'll drive you home.
Okay.
You know, Don, that was a pretty good program we just did, but
hey,
I think...
Hey, Benny!
Huh? Oh, it's you, Mr. Fink.
Yeah. Hey, don't you know some program I can go on and win a refrigerator?
No, I don't. Come on, Don.
Well, I'm going to get a refrigerator even if I have to buy one.
Well, I don't care. Buy one? Get in the car, Mr. Fink. Good night, folks.
Program is written by Sam Kern, Bill Josephsberg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Al Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
That's the Jack Benny program. That was from February 14th, Jack Benny's birthday, Valentine's Day, 1954. Where he was celebrating his 40th birthday, but then realized he was only 39. Actually, in 1954, he was 60 years old during that broadcast.
Well, you used the same joke, the 39 part.
Yeah, I mean, he had it right. I mean, 39. He said in an interview one time, they said, how come you always said you were 39? He said, to me, 39 was funny, 40 was not funny.
He's right.
You know?
I think he's right.
All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Go
All right,
ahead.
So Roger, I feel bad because I interrupted. I would like to hear what this the inner voice that Roger had.
All right. So I was talking about after having shoveled and everything, I was talking about the great night on WGN Radio that we were going to have. Right?
On his Facebook, he was
on
he
Facebook
was noting.
Okay,
so I said, "Off to the races again at the historic Tribune Tower." A little Matt Bubala filling in for Brian Noonan, who's getting beated up in Nolens—not beaten up, but beated,
like a little Mardi Gras.
Yeah, he's down there. Karen Conti, can I sue the plow driver for not seeing me soon enough? The inimitable sage-like leader of our hippie nation, Rick Hogan. And more classic old-time radio with Lisa Wolf, in parentheses, I don't own enough coats to keep me warm in the studio. And Carl Amari, parentheses, do you go in to the turnet or through the turnet?
What's a turnet?
In turnet.
Turnet. Oh.
Remember how you always complain you don't know how to play do this internet
I
stuff?
Like
you
that.
Like that? See,
you know what else I like this week? I saw a jib jab that you put together.
Oh,
Lisa and I What were we doing? Ice skating?
No, roller skating.
We were roller skating, but disco. It was like disco. Exactly. That's why it was so perfect.
It was very cool.
We are great.
We are really talented.
You rocked it.
We did.
You know, I don't even remember filming that.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of dark in there. We had the cameras hidden.
The lights were all spinning.
And I know you didn't have the, how high were the heels on your disco shoes?
Well, he had the lifts inside of the shoes, so nobody would know.
The heels were, what, 6 inches, 7 inches?
Yeah, well, I actually, when I had platform shoes as a kid. I was like, you know, like, remember Saturday Night Fever?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Remember the one guy walking around with the real...
Oh, that's right,
that was like me.
That was Carl.
That was me.
With the leisure suit.
Yeah, right. Well, the roller skates that you were using were kind of that high up.
Right.
Yeah. But you two were like gold medalists.
Lisa, you were really good in that.
I know. Thank you.
Gosh,
I've been working for quite a while.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to go to the Olympics when I get a little older.
They should have roller skating in the Olympics.
Roller skating is dying art.
You know, do they have ping pong in the Olympics still?
Yeah, in the Summer Olympics.
Oh,
yeah.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
He wants to see it. That's Carl's
sport. He doesn't
want to
be in it. Yeah.
Well, they would cream me.
No, you're good.
I am sure you are of Olympic caliber, Carl.
I'm still going to play Bill Leff one of these days.
Okay.
We've been here for about three years,
and we've been talking about it for about 3 years.
You know what, Roger? I hear he's really good.
I hear he's really good.
I mean,
good
like,
too.
He's serious.
Yeah. I heard you're really good, Carl.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at ping pong.
You know? I didn't know we were talking about ping pong.
All righty then. Hey, you know what, Roger?
I'm sorry, what?
Right now, well, in about 30 seconds, it's going to be Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Did you know that?
7 years ago.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln celebrates a birthday on February 12th.
Yeah, 209 years old.
Wow, really?
He looks pretty good,
doesn't he?
Doesn't
look a day over 190.
Nah. Not a bit.
Raymond Massey played him in a very famous movie in the 1930s, and the Lux Radio Theater had a radio adaptation of that movie, and we are going to play it beginning in our next hour. It'll take us all the way to 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to play it in four different parts, around 13 or 14 minutes each part. So that's coming your way when we come back from the news.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, that's us, and we are here all the way till 2 a.m., and we're here every week on Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. So we're on 3 hours on Saturday, and then an additional 3 hours on Sunday. Different programs each Saturday and Sunday. So just because you heard our Saturday show doesn't mean you're going to hear the same things on Sunday. It's always live, and it's always a different classic radio show. Like, we're going to play Lux Radio Theater here in just a moment. You know, Lux Radio Theater was one of the most expensive shows. I think it was like back then, we're talking back in 1938, 39, 40, the budget of the show was in the $100,000 range. Now, could you imagine how much $100,000 was back in 1940? We're talking major budget. And you know who was paying those bills? Lux toilet soap. Mm. That's what they called it, Lux toilet soap back then. Can you imagine how many flakes of soap that was?
That's a lot of dirty people, huh?
Gosh, I mean, that's crazy. All right, that's coming up this hour, Abe Lincoln in Illinois, starring Raymond Massey. As I say, we'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. It's time to play our Crack the Quote game. What is the movie?
The movie is Seven.
Seven.
Yes.
Okay, that was with Brad Pitt, right? And Morgan Freeman. And was it Ashley Judd? No. Somebody else. I can't remember.
I don't know. I didn't see it.
All right. So the number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Play Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote with us. And we're going to go to a commercial break. We'll come back and play the game.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
So excited to play Crack the Quote. We've got Gary on the phone. We'll talk to him. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
How are you?
How are you doing?
Great.
I'm good.
So good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Hoffman Estates, Illinois.
Terrific. Well, we're glad to have you play with us. The movie is Seven. I've got three quotes. One of them is from the movie. The others are not. We'll see how you can do, okay?
Yeah, I've seen the movie
multiple
times, but it's been a while.
All right, well, maybe something will come back to you. It'll just feel right. Okay? Number one. Okay. Number one, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Number two, never interrupt your enemy when he is making a mistake. Number three, we'll be spending every waking hour together from now until the time I leave. I'll show you who your friends and enemies are.
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Is it?
You ain't kidding, that stuff.
Oh, wow. Gary.
It's not number one. That's from a different movie.
Okay.
I'm going to go, well, what do you think, Carl?
I think it's three. I think it's number three.
Yeah, he can help you.
But I could be wrong.
But he's not usually right.
I'm usually wrong, though, Gary.
Yeah, I know. You've been wrong for the last 3 weeks.
I stink at this game.
I know. It's true.
Gosh. I'm good at ping pong, though. Does that help?
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I'm good at pool.
Are you?
Let's do this. Let's flip a coin between two and three. What do you think? You got a coin? I don't have a coin on me.
No.
What do you think?
All right. I'm going to go with Carl. Carl, I love you. You better do this for us.
All right.
Number three, Carl?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, here
number
we go.
Number three. Let's hear it, Shante.
We'll be spending every waking hour together from now until the time I leave. I'll show you who your friends and enemies are.
You guys make a good team. You got it right.
Yeah, Gary.
Carl, I owe you breakfast or lunch or dinner or whatever you need.
All right.
Gary, he's very expensive. He orders the most expensive thing on the menu.
That's where we're going, the Chez Paris. What?
No, I'll tell you what. You pay the freight, and we'll go down to the Flamingo.
Sounds good. Yeah. I like that, Gary.
Well, Gary, congratulations. You're the winner. You've won a pair of tickets to Steel Magnolias. It's playing at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana, from February 22nd through March 25th. You can check it out at theateratthecenter.com. Hey, thanks so much. It was great to play with you.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, and listen, I love them old-time programs. I don't know why, because, I mean, I guess maybe when I was a little child, they got stuck in my head. But, you know, we finally got a TV about 1958.
So
before that.
Yes.
It was all radio.
Yeah, that's right, and that's why we do this, because whether people remember them or not, it was great entertainment, and we want it to live on.
Yeah. And I love it now.
My friend. Thanks, Gary.
Take care.
Take care, buddy. All right, so he knows pool, and I know ping pong. I can teach him ping pong. He can teach me pool.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Right? And then we're going to have breakfast, and then we're going to Vegas.
There you go.
I got a new best friend.
I know. Have some fun.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's time now for the Lux Radio Theater, Lisa. I think you like Lux Radio Theater,
like
right?
I do like Lux.
You know, Lux Radio Theater were movie recreations. It was the longest and most extravagant show from the golden age of radio. It had the greatest guest stars appearing in hour-long radio adaptations of their biggest motion pictures. Most of the time, the actual star from the movie appeared on the radio show. Most of the time, not always. In fact, I was listening to The Maltese Falcon recently, and it did not have Humphrey Bogart. It had Edward G. Robinson. But, you know, it was still great. It came to radio in 1934. Cecil B. DeMille was the host. And you know how much a star would make on the show? Take a guess. Now, we're talking about 1940. Like, they would have to say, for instance, on this show, Raymond Massey. What do you think they paid him back in 1940? To be on this show.
Well, you're talking about a $100,000 budget,
yeah.
Right? So they're going to make some good money, even in 1940, $1,000.
$5,000.
Ooh, I was going to say $1,000.
You know how much money that was back then?
I would know how much
right now, that
would be nice.
Yeah. Lux Soap was the sponsor. 926 hours were produced on this series, and we have most of them. Yeah, we have most of them. All right, it's time now for Abe Lincoln in Illinois. We'll celebrate his birthday. Let's go back to April 22nd, 1940. Here's part one of the Lux Radio Theater.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lux Radio Theater brings you Raymond Massey, Fay Bainter, and Otto Kruger in Abe Lincoln in Illinois. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille. Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. When I was a boy, there were thousands of people alive who had known Abraham Lincoln, had watched his inauguration, heard him speak at Gettysburg, and looked on as a train draped in mourning took him back to his beloved Illinois. But tonight he lives for all of us again, portrayed by a gifted star, Raymond Massey, in Robert E. Sherwood's great play, Abe Lincoln in Illinois. A Pulitzer Prize drama on Broadway and a distinguished motion picture. Mr. Massey starred in both productions and brings the stage play to Los Angeles this week, which gave us just the opportunity we'd been waiting for to get the original star in a radio adaptation of the Sherwood play. As Mary Todd, we present another favorite of Broadway and Hollywood, Miss Fay Bainter, in her first appearance here this season. And as Ninian Edwards, a friend of Lincoln, we have Otto Kruger. Abe Lincoln in Illinois is an American saga, the story of a young man with the courage, humor, and great heart that makes America American. It's the drama of Lincoln before he became a national hero, a man so simple, friendly, and unaffected that the politicians couldn't understand him at all. It's not easy to picture Illinois when Lincoln was a young man. Much of it was backwoods. Politics was strictly a man's affair because women couldn't vote. And the district forum was the general store where you could buy anything from sunbonnets to sassafras tea. Unfortunately for the ladies, you could not buy Lux toilet soap. But the march of civilization brings the progress of beauty. And today, the woman who values her appearance can find Lux soap everywhere. Luxurious, but not a luxury. It's with very special pride now that we raise the curtain on Act One of Abe Lincoln in Illinois, starring Raymond Massey as Lincoln, Fay Bainter as Mary Todd, Otto Kruger as Ninian Edwards, and Calvin Thomas from the stage cast as Josh Speed. In the early 1830s, a lonely cabin stands on the prairie near New Salem, Illinois. Across its bare logs, the wind blows steadily, creeping through the chinks in the rough wall, fluttering the oil lamp swinging overhead. Sitting at a table piled high with books and papers is Mentor Graham, a sharp but patient schoolteacher. And across from him in the shadows, his pupil, a beardless, gaunt young backwoodsman in ragged clothes.
Now for the moves. Every one of us has many moves. You yourself have more than your share of them, Abe. They express the various aspects of your character. And so it is with the English language. And name me the five moods, Abe.
Indicative, imperative, potential, subjunctive, and infinitive.
And what do they signify?
Well, the indicative mood's the easy one. It just indicates a thing like he loves or he is loved. The imperative mood is used for commanding, like get out and don't come back.
Is that the best example you can think of?
Well, you can put it in the Bible way, go thou in peace, but it's still imperative.
Now, here, Abe, this is a speech delivered by Mr. Daniel Webster before the United States Senate. Find me a good example of the imperative mood.
Oh, let's see. While the Union lasts, we have... Let their last feeble glance rather behold the glorious ensign of the Republic.
That's right.
Liberty first and Union afterward. Liberty and Union, now and forever, one and inseparable. He must have had them up on their feet cheering at that, all right.
Some cheered and some spat, depending on which section they came from.
What was he talking about?
It was in the debate over the right of any state to secede from the Union. And he proved that without Union, we'd have precious little liberty. Now, go on with the potential mood.
That signifies possibility, usually of an unpleasant nature. Like, if I ever get out of debt, I'll probably get right back in again.
Why did you select that example?
It just happens to be the thought that's always heaviest on my mind.
The store in trouble again?
Yeah, Barry's drunk all the whiskey we ought to have sold, and we're going to have to shut up any day now. I guess I'm my father's son, all right. Give me a good, steady job, and I'll fail at it.
You haven't been a failure here, Abe. There isn't a man jack in this community that isn't fond of you. And anxious to help you get ahead.
I know, just like you, Mentor. Sitting up late nights to give me learning just out of the goodness of your heart. Now, Josh Speed and Judge Bowling Green, some of the others I owe money to, want to get me the job of postmaster, thinking that maybe I can handle that since there's only one mail comes in a week. Well, I got friends, all right, but they can't change my luck. It'll always be the same story with me. More friends and more debts.
Well, Abe, just bear in mind that there are always two professions open to people who fail at everything else. There's school teaching and there's politics.
And I'll choose school teaching. You go into politics and you may get elected.
Yes, there's always that possibility.
If you get elected, you gotta go to the city. I don't want none of that.
Oh, what's your objection to cities, Abe? Have you ever seen one?
Sure. I've been downriver twice to New Orleans. You know, every minute of the time I was there, I was scared.
Scared of what, Abe?
Oh, it sounds kind of foolish. I was scared of people.
No. Did you imagine that they'd rob you of all your gold and jewels?
No. I was scared they'd kill me.
Why? Why should they want to kill you?
I don't know.
Oh, you're a hopeless mess of inconsistency, Abe Lincoln.
What do you mean, Mandor?
I've never seen anyone who's so friendly and at the same time so misanthropic.
What's that?
A misanthrope? There's one who distrusts men and avoids their society.
Oh, or maybe that's how I am. Oh, I like people well enough when you consider them one by one, but they seem to look different when they're put into crowds or mobs or armies.
Abe, there's one more thing I want to show you tonight. It's a poem on death written at the age of 19 by John Keats. You read it, Abe.
Can death be sleep when life is but a dream and scenes of bliss pass as a phantom by? The transient pleasures as a vision seem, and yet we think the greatest pains to die. How strange it is that man on earth should roam and lead a life of woe, but not forsake his rugged path, nor dare he view alone his future doom, which is but to awake. That sure is good, Manor. It's fine.
Abe Lincoln.
Morning, Josh.
Well, it's come. Letter just arrived from Washington. You're the new postmaster, Abe.
The new postmaster. Well, that's nice, Josh. Do you think I'll be able to carry all the responsibility? Gotta take a letter over to Rutley's Tavern first.
Well, hurry up, Abe. We'll be waiting for you.
All right, that's the first portion of the Lux Radio Theater presentation of Abe Lincoln in Illinois, starring Raymond Massey. We'll have more of that in just a few minutes. First, these words. Well, Lisa, I gotta tell you, these surprise boxes are going fast. People are ordering the classic Radio One the most, and then the classic TV and classic movies second best, and then Twilight Zone's third best. And that's actually the order of the boxes. Box one is classic radio on CD. Surprise box two is classic television and movies on DVD. And surprise box three is the Twilight Zone radio dramas on CDs. Now, here's the deal, folks. You can get any one of these surprise boxes, which gives you over $150 worth of brand new product. It's in the cellophane. It is absolutely brand spanking new. It's not used. A lot of times people sell things on eBay and all that. It's not that. This is in the cellophane, brand spanking new. And you can get CDs of classic radio shows. You can get DVDs of your favorite classic TV and movies. And then the Twilight Zone radio drama CDs. And you only pay $39.99 per surprise box. And you get $150 or more worth of product. How do you learn about this? Just go to our website, WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com. And when you go there, there will be a pop-up on the website, and it'll tell you all about it. You can learn about it. And you know what? When the product is gone, because we have a warehouse which is being depleted. It was filled to the gills. Now it's maybe about three-quarters of the way filled. So it's slowly but surely, it'll be gone before you know it. So do get your surprise box of either classic radio on CD, classic TV on DVD, or Twilight Zone on CD. Just go to WGNRadioTheater.com and check out our surprise boxes. And they're going fast. And you know what? We're getting tons of texts from people.
Yeah, a lot of emails. They're so happy with that.
Saying how much they enjoy it. So yep. I'm glad we're doing this because, you know what? I was sitting, had all this product in the warehouse.
You know, it's hard to find CDs anymore.
Yeah.
You know, a lot
and
of
DVDs
people still want to, you know, CDs and DVDs and yeah. everything is digital download. So if you yep. do appreciate CDs and DVDs, this is your opportunity.
Yep. Check it out. Go to WGNRadioTheater.com and check out the pop-up. All right. We're going to have more of the Lux Radio Theater, Abe Lincoln in Illinois, starring Raymond Massey along with Faye Boehner.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Esmeralda. Thank you, Roger. It is 12:35 in the morning on a Monday morning, a very cold Monday morning, and we are broadcasting from the Igloo Studios here at 435 North Michigan Avenue because the heater is out. And Lisa has
windows in here.
Lisa has icicles forming on her nose.
No, those are yours. You've got the snot running down the nose. I'm good.
I didn't say it was snot. I just said it was
well, it starts
icicles.
Out as snot and then it turns into ice.
Really? Is that
mm-hmm.
what it is?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know, Abe Lincoln was cold, too. They didn't have heat back then.
No.
In his log cabin.
No.
What are you complaining about?
What?
Abe Lincoln had it a lot tougher than this.
Maybe,
we have winter coats,
maybe they
hats.
Had, you know, body heat or something.
You know, we have heat holders.
Right.
Right?
Yes, we
heat
do.
Holders are the best, man. Heatholders.com. Remember to use the WGN code, 15% off. Heat hold. I could use heat holders right now here
yeah.
in the studio.
Yeah, a nice little blanket would be good.
They have the best products.
Yeah.
Heatholders.com. Make sure when you order, use the WGN promo code and get 15% off. All right, let's get back now to the Lux Radio Theater.
Morning, Miss Ann.
Oh, Abe. I'm glad you came, Abe.
Got a letter here.
A letter for me?
Miss Ann Rutledge, Rutledge's Tavern. That's you, Miss Ann.
Thank you, Abe.
What's all that?
Abe, is that ruffian Jack Armstrong? I'm afraid there's going to be a fight in there.
Fight? Who and why?
Well, the governor's son is here.
Abe, come in here, will you?
Coming, Judge Green.
Come on, stand up. Stand up, Mr. Edwards.
Careful, Mr. Edwards.
I'm afraid there's nothing else I can do.
Come on, come on.
Oh, Jack. Hello, boys.
Hello.
Ain't you fellas drunk yet?
Abe, there's going to be a fight.
What about?
This is the son of Governor Edwards, Abe. Come from Springfield looking for a little fight, and I'm aiming to oblige.
Put a stop to it, Abe. It'll be next door to
you
murder.
You set your trap, Judge Green. Murder's too good for any goose-livered enemy of Andy Jackson. Come on, boys, get it.
Wait a minute, boy, Jack. You forgot what day it is?
No, I ain't. But I reckon the 4th is as good a day as any to whip a politician.
Well, if you just got to fight, Jack, you shouldn't give preference to strangers. Being postmaster of this thriving town, I rate as a politician, so you better try a fall with me.
Now, look here, Abe. You're stepping into something that ain't none of your business. This is a private matter, a patriotic honor.
Everything in this town's my business, Jack. It's the only kind of business I got. Besides, I seen Hannah down by the grove, and she says to tell you to come on to a picnic, and that means now. You better hurry, Jack, or you'll get a beating from Hannah.
All right. Abe Lincoln saved your hide, Mr. Edwards. I'll consent to calling off the fight just because he's a friend of mine.
Because I'm the only one around here you can't lick.
Oh.
Go on, Jack. Anna's waiting.
All right, but it ain't because I'm afraid. Now,
that's... Well, congratulations, Ninian. I shouldn't have enjoyed taking you home to Mrs. Edwards after those boys had done with you.
Well, I was aware of the certain consequences, Joss. I'm deeply in your debt, Mr. Lincoln.
Oh, never mind any thanks, Mr. Edwards. Jack Armstrong talks big, but he means well.
Won't you join us in a drink?
No, thank you.
Abe, sit down.
We want to talk to you.
Me? What about Boland?
Abe, we brought Mr. Edwards here for the sole purpose of meeting you, and with his permission, I shall tell you why.
Go right ahead, Judge.
Abe, how would you like to run for the state assembly?
When?
Now, for the election in the fall.
Why?
Mr. Lincoln, I've known you for only a few minutes, but that's long enough to make me agree with Josh Speed that you're precisely the type of man we want. The whole Whig organization will support your candidacy.
This was all your idea, Josh?
Oh, no, Abe. You're the people's choice.
What do you think, Abe?
Well, it's a comical notion, all right. Don't know as I can give an answer to it offhand, but my first hasty impression is I don't think much of it.
Abe, what's the one thing you want most? You want to learn. Well, this will give you a chance to get at a good library. To associate with the finest lawyers in the state.
Oh, I got a copy of Blackstone already. Found it in an old junk barrel. How do I know that the finest lawyers would welcome association with me?
You needn't worry about that. I saw how you dealt with those ruffians. You quite obviously know how to handle men.
Oh, I can handle Armstrong and his boys because he can out-wrestle them, but he can't go around Sangamon County throwing all the voters.
We'll take a chance on that, Abe.
Now, think it over, Mr. Lincoln. This is an opportunity unlimited in scope. We're becoming a continent, Mr. Lincoln, and all that we need is men. And now, gentlemen, if you'll excuse me, I've got to be moving on. Goodbye, Mr. Lincoln. This meeting has been a happy one for me.
Goodbye, Mr. Edwards.
Abe, think it over carefully. This is your chance, Abe.
Oh, think about it, Josh, but I can tell you now I don't like it.
Well, goodbye, Abe.
Miss Ann.
Yes? What is it, Abe?
I just thought you might like to talk to me, Miss Ann.
What about?
That letter you got from New York State.
What do you know about that letter?
Well, I'm the postmaster. Guess I know more than ought to about people's private affairs. I couldn't help seeing that was the handwriting of Mr. McNeil, and I can't help seeing from the look on your face that the bad news you've been afraid of has come.
Whatever the letter said, it's no concern of yours, Abe.
I know that, Ann. But it appears to me that you've been crying, and it makes me sad to think that something could have hurt you.
You're a Christian gentleman, Abe Lincoln.
No, I ain't. I'm a plain common sucker with a shirt tail so short I can't set on it.
Well, sit down anyway, Abe. Here, by me. You're right about that letter, Abe. It's the first I've heard from him in months. And now he says he's delayed by family troubles and doesn't know when he'll be able to get to New Salem again. By which he probably means never.
I wouldn't say that, Ann.
I would. I reckon you think I'm a silly fool for ever having promised myself to Mr. McNeil.
I think no such thing. I liked him myself and still do. He's a smart man and a handsome one, and I wouldn't blame any girl for loving him.
I guess I don't love him, Abe. I guess I couldn't love anybody that was as faithless as that.
Well, then, there's nothing to fret about.
I don't believe you know much about females, Abe.
Well, maybe I don't. I certainly spend enough time thinking about them.
Well, you're a big man, and you can lick anybody, and you can't understand the feelings of somebody who is weak. But I'm a female, and I can't help thinking what they'll be saying about me. All the old gossips all over town. They'll make it out that he deserted me. I'm a rejected woman. They'll give me their sympathy to my face, but they'll snigger at me behind my back.
Yes, that's just about what they would do. But would you let them disturb you?
I told you. It's just weakness. Just vanity. It's something you couldn't understand, Abe.
Maybe I can understand it, Ann. I got a kind of vanity myself. It's nothing but vanity that's kept me from declaring my inclination toward you.
Abe!
See, I don't like to be sniggered at either. I know what I am. I know what I look like. I know I got nothing to offer any girl I'd be in love with.
Are you saying that you're in love with me, Abe?
Yes. I am saying that. I've been loving you for a long time with all my heart. You see, Ann, you're a particularly fine girl. You got sense and you got bravery. Those are two things I admire particularly. And you're powerful good to look at, too, so it's only natural I should have a great regard for you. But I don't mean to worry about it, Ann. Only mention it, because if you do me the honor of keeping company with me for a while, it might shut the old gossip's mouth. They'd figure you'd Chuck McNeil or someone else. Even me.
I thought I knew you pretty well, Abe. But I didn't.
Why do you say that, Ann? Do you consider I was too forward in speaking out as I did?
No, Abe. I've always thought a lot of you. The way I thought you were. The idea of love between you and me. Well, I can't say how I'd feel about that, because now you're like some other person that I'm meeting for the first time. But I can tell you this much, now and truthfully. If I ever do love you, I'll be happy about it. And lucky to be loving a good, decent man.
I've always tried hard to believe what the orators tell us, that this is a land of equal opportunity for all. But I've never been able to credit it any more than I could agree that God made all men in his own image. But if I could win you, Anne, I'd be willing to disbelieve everything I've ever seen with my own eyes and have faith in everything wonderful that I'd ever read in poetry books. But I'm not asking you to say anything now, Anne. And I won't ask you until the day comes when I know I've got a right to.
Abe, where are you going?
I'm going to find Bowling Green and tell him a good joke.
A joke? What about?
I'm going to tell him that I'm a candidate for the Assembly of the State of Illinois.
Well, there it is, Abe. You're elected.
State Assembly. Well, I guess I'll have to do my best. But my best ain't none too good. I've been here in the Assembly for over a year now without accomplishing a blessed thing. Sometimes I think...
Abe?
Yes?
There's a man here from New Salem. Says he's got news about a friend of yours.
Who?
A Miss Ann Rutledge.
What about her?
She's sick, Abe. She's sick, pretty near to dying.
That must be Abe now. He said he'd come right over from the Rutledges.
Well, let him in, Bowling.
Why, hello, Abe. Nancy, I and Josh here have been sitting up waiting for you. Come in out of the wet.
Hello, Abe. Hello, Josh. Glad to see you. Nancy.
Yes, Abe?
She's dead.
Ann?
Yes, tonight the fever suddenly got worse. They couldn't seem to do anything for her.
Oh, Abe, I'm so sorry.
Sit down, Abe, and rest yourself.
No, I'm not fit company for anybody. I'd better be going.
No, you don't, Abe. You stay right here.
You better do what Josh tells you. This is your home, Abe. This is where you're loved.
Yes, that's right. And I love you, Bolin and Nancy. But I loved her more than anything else I've ever known.
I know you did, Abe. I know
it. I used to think it was best to be alone. I was always most contented when I was alone. Queer notion that if you get too close to people, you could see the truth about them. But behind the surface, they're all insane, and they could see the same in you. And then, when I saw her, I knew there could be beauty and purity in people, like the purity you sometimes see in the sky at night. And I took hold of her hand and held it. All fear, all doubt went out of me. I believed in God. And I've been glad to work for her until I die, to get for her everything out of life that she wanted. If she thought I could do it, then I could. That was my belief. And then I had to stand there, as helpless as a twig in a whirlpool. I had to stand there and watch her die. And her father and mother were there too, praying to God for her soul. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That's what they kept on saying. I couldn't pray with him. I'm making a pretty poor exhibition of myself, and I'm sorry. But I can't stand it. I can't live with myself any longer. I got to die and be with her again, or I'll go crazy. I can't bear to think of her out there alone.
Abe, wait. I want you to go upstairs and see if you can't get some sleep. Please, Abe. As a special favor to Nancy and me.
All right, boy.
Here's a light for you, dear Abe.
Thank you, Nancy. Good night.
Poor lonely soul. Poor lonely soul.
Have passed. Abe Lincoln is still a young man, but he looks more than his 31 years, for his youth was buried with Ann Rutledge. His term in the assembly over, Abe has taken up law practice in Springfield. He's returning now from a trip as Billy Herndon, the junior member of the firm, greets him at the door.
How do, Mr. Lincoln? Glad to see you back. How was it on the circuit, Mr. Lincoln?
Oh, by the usual.
Did you have any occasion to make any political speeches?
Oh, they got me up in the stump a couple of times. Ran into Stephen Douglas. He was out campaigning, of course, and he had some argument in public.
That's good. What issues did you and Mr. Douglas discuss?
Oh, don't get excited, Billy. We weren't taking it serious. There was no bloodshed. Well, what's the news here?
Well, this letter, they want you to speak at an abolitionist rally next Thursday evening.
Billy, I was on a boat coming from Quincy to Alton the other day, and there was a gentleman on board with 12 Negroes. He was shipping them down to Vicksburg for sale, had them chained 6 and 6 together. They were going to be whipped into perpetual slavery and no questions asked. Quite a shocking sight.
Then you will give a speech at the Lovejoy rally.
I doubt it. That Freeman's League is a pack of fanatics. Talk reason to them and they scorn you for being a mealy-mouth. Let them make their own noise.
Hello, Abe. Are we interrupting the majesty of the law?
Bolin.
I found him at the station, Abe.
Hi, Bolin.
Tolerably well, Abe. I'm glad to see you. Not interrupting.
Not at all. This young firebrand Billy here was just about to launch into another speech on abolition. He's a wildcat, this Billy. Can't stand for anybody who wants to remain peaceful.
Billy, my profound compliment. But I thought you were opposed to slavery, Abe.
I am opposed to slavery, but I'm even more opposed to war, especially civil war. But I see what you're getting at, Bolin. You're following Billy Herndon's lead. You're troubling your kind hearts with concerns of me, and when am I going to amount to something?
Well, we've all been hoping you'd run for Congress, Abe.
No, I'm no fighting man, Josh. If I got elected and went to Congress, I might find myself someday having to cast my vote on the terrible issue of war or peace. I want no part in deciding things like that, or voting to avoid war at all costs at the expense of the Union.
You always were an artful dodger, Abe. And maybe you'll go live to go on to the end of your days, avoiding the clutch of your own conscience.
Afternoon, Abe. How are you, gentlemen?
Ninian, come in.
Hello, Ninian.
Sit down.
Thanks, Abe. Well, I just called in to tell you, gentlemen, that you must dine with us.
Delighted.
We're proudly exhibiting my sister-in-law, Miss Mary Todd, who has just come from Kentucky to grace our home. She's a very gay young lady, speaks French like a native, recites poetry at the drop of a hat, and knows the names and habits of all the flowers. Well, I've asked Steve Douglas and some of the other eligibles to meet her. So you boys had better get in early. You'll be along presently, Abe?
Shouldn't be surprised.
Good. You'll meet a delightful young lady. And I'd better warn you, she's going to survey the whole field of matrimonial prospects and select the one who promises the most. So you'd better be on your guard, Abe, unless you're prepared to lose your standing as a free man.
And I thank you for the warning.
All right, that's part 2 of 4 of the Lux Radio Theater with Abe Lincoln in Illinois. And this is a broadcast date from April 22nd, 1940, as heard on CBS. And we had the actual star of the movie, Raymond Massey, portraying Abe Lincoln. You remember what movie Raymond Massey was in that was sort of a comedy, and it's a play, been many times on Broadway and everywhere else? Arsenic and Old Lace.
I've actually never seen that play.
You have never seen the play?
Nope. Mm-mm.
You know what, Lisa?
What?
I was in that play.
I know.
As a kid.
I know.
Not the Broadway production.
I know that too.
Although
I've seen a lot of plays here.
Although
in Chicago.
I would do it on Broadway if they asked me.
I bet you would.
Yeah.
I've seen hundreds of thousands of plays here
and
in
you've
Chicago.
Never seen Arsenic
and
Old Lace.
You know, in the last 10 years, I've never seen it. Nope.
I played Dr. Einstein. You know what part that is? In the movie, it was played by Peter Lorre.
Oh.
And then Raymond Massey played, you know, the sort of the Boris Karloff guy. You know,
I mean, we're talking, what, about 40 years ago?
From what I understand, from what I understand, the movie came out, okay? Mm-hmm. No, I take it back. There was a Broadway play.
Well, it started with a book.
Right, but there was a Broadway play, and Boris Karloff was actually playing the Johnny role, which was, and he did it on Broadway, and then the movie came out, or they were casting the movie, and they wanted Boris Karloff for the movie, but he couldn't do it for
so
whatever reason.
That would be your chance.
No. That's no, not the part of it. So then they got Raymond Massey to play that. That's why Raymond Massey is in the Arsenic and Old Lace movie. You know, Cary Grant I mean, yeah, Cary Grant is in the movie as well. Peter Lorre did play, I believe, also the role on Broadway. So very interesting stuff. Raymond Massey was great in that movie as Johnny.
I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, it's such a funny movie and such a great play.
I've never seen the play.
If you ever see it, like, let's say at Goodman or somewhere like that, you should see it.
Yeah,
because it's just a laugh a minute. It's so funny.
Huh.
Yeah. You know what it's about?
No.
I don't have enough time for me to go get into it.
Well,
but you must see it.
If it comes,
it's a must see.
If it comes, I will see it.
All right. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Well, in a week or so, maybe 2 weeks, we're going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, which is our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. Dan Jaffe, who is the CEO of Cat's Pride. He's also the CEO of the parent company, which is Oil Dry. They are very generous. They are not only our main sponsor here, but they give away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to one of our listeners every single month. They don't do this anywhere else. They just do it here on the WGN Radio Theater. They do give away millions of pounds of kitty litter to shelters all across the country because they're just great people, and they want to help cats and dogs in shelters. But what they do here is really generous. They've been doing it since day one, every month, giving away a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Now, all you have to do to win is enter, and hopefully they'll pick your name. Right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
What should they do? What should our listeners do?
So this will happen the last Sunday of February.
Yep.
And what you need to do is send a picture of your cat and email it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure to include your name, your cat's name, your city, and state. And then, of course, join us that last Sunday of the month and listen for your name to be called. Mm-hmm. That's your job.
Well, you know what? Somebody wins every month.
Yep.
So just think about it. They've been doing this for almost 3 years.
Yeah, it's quite a valuable
gift. Times 12. Ready for this? 36 people have won.
Get out of here.
How do you like that?
You are
math
sharp.
Right off the top of my head. I didn't use a calculator or an abacus or anything.
You're
just
good.
Just did that right off the top of my
head. I'm impressed.
Math was one of my better subjects.
Yeah, I can see that.
So 36 people have, I think, pretty soon. Well, in April.
April will be like...
March. In March will be the 36th person.
Right.
That'll have gotten a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. So it could be you, folks. So all you have to do is get that picture in of your cat, right?
Yep.
Email it to us, catspridephoto@gmail.com.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hey, Esmeralda, how's the temperature up there? You warm?
I am comfortable.
Don't come down here then. It's probably, 25?
Literally, it's probably 60.
Oh, no, it's colder than 60.
55.
I'm calling it
the igloo.
The Showcase Igloo Studios here on 435 North Michigan Avenue. Well, I'm glad you're toasty warm up there. We're going to come up there and do the show from the traffic hut. Is that what it is?
Just got one mic here, so we're going to have to share.
Okay, we'll share. Thanks, Esmeralda. It is 6 minutes after 1 in the morning here on the WGN Radio Theater. And in this hour, we will have the concluding two quarters of the Lux Radio Theater presentation of Abe Lincoln in Illinois. We are celebrating Abe Lincoln's birthday, which is today. Yeah.
Yes,
I like that timing.
Yeah.
Raymond Massey starring as Abe Lincoln. And we're going to play Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. Right, Lisa?
We are. The movie is...
Yeah.
The Usual Suspects.
Usual Suspects. Okay. And you're going to win some Twilight Zone CDs?
Well, I'm not, but somebody will.
Yeah, one of our listeners. All right. Call us now. 312-981-7200. We'll take the third caller. 312-981-7200. The movie is The Usual Suspects. And we'll play our game and listen to more of Lux Radio Theater after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Carl's dancing in the studio. We might have to change the music.
I was roller skating, and now I'm dancing.
Okay. We have Roy on the phone. Hi, Roy.
Hi.
Nice to hear from you. My Shante tells us you're from Vermont.
Yeah, I'm calling you from Vermont.
Wow, amazing. Fantastic. We're so glad that you're listening and calling in, and we're hoping you'll play a little Crack the Quote with us.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, this is from The Usual Suspects. We've got three quotes. Your only job here is to tell me which is the right one from the movie. And either way, you have already won some Twilight Zone CD set. Okay?
Oh, terrific.
All righty. Quote number one. I'm smarter than you, and I'm going to find out what I want to know, whether you like it or not. Number two.
That sounds like something you would say.
That's right, it does. Number two. Had enough, or are you hungry for more? Number three, don't be dumb. You're smart. Does that sound like something I would say, Carl?
Yeah. I have no idea, Roy. What do you think?
I don't either. I'm not up on the latest. This is an old movie, right?
Yeah.
It is an old movie. It's from 1995.
Gosh, I wasn't even born yet.
But you know what? It doesn't matter. Just whatever you get a hunch.
One of the Godfather movies.
Yeah, we did. We actually did one of the Godfather movies last weekend, I think we did.
So what do you think? Is it one, two, or three?
One.
One. I'm
what
smarter than
one?
You, and I'm going to find out what I want to know, whether you like it or not.
And what are the other ones?
Number two is had enough, or are you hungry for more?
Uh-huh.
Number three is don't be dumb. You're smart.
I'm going to say...
Maybe it should be three.
Do you want to change it up, Roy? You want to go with three?
Three, yeah.
All right, so Roy says three. I'm going to say one. All right?
Okay.
Yeah, let's see what we got
here. Okay, Shante.
I'm smarter than you. And I'm going to find out what I want to know, whether you like it or not.
Roy, you should have gone with your first instinct. It was number one.
But I got it right, right, Lisa?
Yeah, but I'm just going to say he got it right because he knew that, and he just switched.
I didn't know it.
I know, but you pressured him to switch.
I didn't pressure Roy to switch.
Yes, you did. I'm going to go with you got it right. Roy, you got it right, and you just won the Twilight Zone. It's an odd... Well, I'm sorry, what?
I was pressured.
I know. Carl puts a lot of pressure on. He pressures me all the time. It was Carl's fault. You got it right. It's number one, and you have won a Twilight Zone audio CD set hosted by Stacey Keach.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going to enjoy it, Roy. You'll like it.
Yeah. No, I was hoping it was, I forgot his name now.
Who's that?
The original director.
Oh, yeah.
Rod
no.
Serling.
These are radio dramas, but they're fantastic. You're going to love it.
I love radio.
Stacey Keach is the host.
You keep me up every weekend.
Oh, good. All right. Well, stay with us and listen to the rest of the show.
Okay. Thank you.
All right,
take
my friend.
Care.
Thanks, Roy. Okay. Roy is a big winner. He won some Twilight Zone CD set. It's time now for part three of four of the Lux Radio Theater.
Mary, I can't believe it.
Can't believe what, dear?
Mary, I am your sister, and I want the truth. Now, you have known Abraham Lincoln for 6 months. Have you ever given one moment serious thought to the possibility of marriage?
I shall answer you, Elizabeth. I've given more than one moment's thought to the possibility you mentioned, and I've decided that I shall be Mrs. Lincoln.
So, Ninian, you were right.
Thank you, my dear.
Mary, do you expect me to congratulate you upon this amazing selection?
No. I offer no congratulations, nor condolences either.
Well, forgive me for prying, Mary, but have you as yet communicated your decision to the gentleman himself?
Not yet. But he's coming to call this evening, and he will humbly ask for my hand in marriage. And after I've displayed the proper amount of surprise and confusion, I shall murmur timidly, yes.
Well, you make a brave jest of it, Mary. But as for me, I'm deeply and painfully shocked.
Mary, I should like to know...
I think, Ninian, that this is a matter for discussion solely between my sister and myself.
No, I want to hear what Ninian has to say.
Well, understand, my dear, I'm not quarreling with you. My affection for Abe is eternal, but I'm curious to know what is it about him that makes you choose him for a husband?
I should like to give you a plain, simple answer, Ninian. But I cannot.
Of course you cannot. You're rushing blindly into this. Oh, haven't you sense enough to see you could never be happy with him? His breeding, his background, his manner, his whole point of view.
I could not be content with a happy marriage in the accepted sense of the word. I have no craving for comfort and security. So long as there's forever before me the chance for high adventure. So long as I can know that I'm always going forward with my husband along a road that leads across the horizon.
And how far do you think you will go with anyone like Abe Lincoln, who is lazy and shiftless and prefers to stop constantly along the way to tell jokes?
We'll not stop if I have strength enough to make him go on. And I'm strong. In Abraham Lincoln, I see a man who split rails for other men's fences, but who'll never build one around himself.
What are you saying, Mary?
I imagine it does seem like insanity to you, but not to me. I want the chance to shape a new life for myself and for my husband.
Mr. Lincoln, ma'am.
He's here.
I shall see him. Send him in, please.
Evening, Mrs. Edwards. Evening, Miss Todd.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Lincoln.
Evening, Annie.
Well, glad to see you, Abe. If you'll excuse Elizabeth and me, we must hear the children's prayers and see them safely abed.
Oh, I'd be glad to hear the prayers, too.
Oh, no, no. You'd only keep them up till all hours with your stories. And come along, Elizabeth.
Mary, won't you come with us and say goodnight to the children?
No, no, my dear. No, leave Mary here to keep Abe entertained.
I don't blame Ninian for keeping you away from those children. They all adore you.
Well, I always seem to get along well with children, probably because they don't want to take me seriously.
You understand them. That's the important thing. But do sit down, Mr. Lincoln.
Thank you. I will.
No, not there. Over here, by me.
Josh, have you finished the letter?
Yes.
Do you think it's all right?
No, Abe, I don't. I think the sending of this letter to Mary Todd would be a most grave mistake.
Well, I understand that you will not deliver it for me.
No, Abe, I won't.
Then someone else will.
Yes, you can give it to the minister this afternoon to hand to the bride when she arrives for the ceremony. But I hope, Abe, you won't send it until you're feeling a little calmer in your mind.
How can I ever be calm in my mind until this thing is settled and out of the way once and for all? Have you got eyes in your head, Josh? Can't you see that I'm desperate? Got to get out of this marriage. I can't go through with it. I've got to have my release.
Hello, Abe.
Hello.
Good morning, Josh. You're helping to keep the bridegroom quiet on his wedding day? Well, I can promise you, Abe, it'll be quite painless. Elizabeth and I have arranged for a bang-up wedding dinner.
Good morning, Mr. Edwards.
Good morning, Billy. Oh, Abe, I've only got a moment, and this is the last chance I'll have to speak to you before the ceremony. Well, the fact that the bride is my sister-in-law gives me a little added responsibility in wishing to promote the success of this marriage. And a success it will be, Abe, if only you'll bear in mind one thing. You must keep a tight rein on her ambition. My wife tells me that even as a child, Mary had delusions of grandeur. She predicted to one and all that the man she would marry would be President of the United States. Well, I urge you to beware, Abe. Don't let her talk you into any gallant crusades or wild goose chases. You let her learn to be satisfied with the estate to which God hath brought her, with which I shall conclude my prenuptial sermon. Well, to see you all at the house at 5 o'clock. And I want you gentlemen to make sure that Abe Lincoln is looking his prettiest.
Goodbye, Ninian. Well, Abe, you'd better go along home.
That's right. You'll be late for the wedding, Mr. Lincoln.
There's not going to be a wedding. Billy, I have a letter that I want you to deliver to Miss Ty.
What letter?
Give it to him, Josh.
No, Abe, this letter will never be delivered.
Josh, you got no right to tear that up. You got no right.
I know I haven't, but it's done. Billy, in that letter, Mr. Lincoln asked Miss Todd for his release. He told her that he'd made a mistake and couldn't go through with a marriage which could only lead to endless pain and misery for them both.
That isn't the truth. What is?
I'm not disputing the truth of it, Abe. I'm only asking you to tell her so to her face in the manner of a man.
It'd be a more cruel way. It would hurt her more deeply. I'd have to tell her that I have hate for her infernal ambition. That I don't want to be ridden and driven onward and upward through life with her whip lashing me and her spurs digging into me. If her poor little soul craves importance in life, then let her marry Stephen Douglas. He's ambitious, too. I want only to be left alone.
Mr. Lincoln,
I doubt if
may I say something?
Contribute.
What is it, Billy?
Well, it's just this. Mr. Lincoln, you're not abandoning Miss Mary Todd. No, you're only using her as a living sacrifice in the hope that you'll gain forgiveness of the gods for your failure to do your own great duty.
Yes, my own great duty. Everyone feels called upon to remind me of it, but no one can tell me what it is.
Well, I can tell you. I can tell you what's the duty of every man who calls himself an American. It's to perpetuate those truths which were once held to be self-evident. That all men are created equal. That they're endowed with certain inalienable rights. That among these are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Are those rights denied to me?
Could you ever enjoy them while your mind is full of the awful knowledge that 2 million of your fellow beings in this country are slaves? Can you take any satisfaction from looking at that flag above your desk when you know that 10 of its stars represent states which are willing to destroy the Union? That's your flag, Mr. Lincoln, and you're proud of it. But what are you doing to save it from being ripped into shreds?
I'm minding my own business. That's what I'm doing. And there'd be no threat to the Union if others would do the same. And as for slavery, I'm sick and tired of all this righteous talk about it. When you know more about the law, you'll know that those property rights you mentioned are guaranteed under the Constitution. And if the Union can't stand on the Constitution, then let it fall.
Abe, where are you going?
I'll go up now and I'll talk to Mary. Tell her I can never marry her. Then I'm going away.
Where, Abe?
I don't know.
You're quitting, Mr. Lincoln. As surely as there's a God in heaven, he knows that you're running away from your obligations to him and to your fellow men and to your own immortal soul.
Billy, leave him alone. He's a sick man.
Two years later, on the great plain near New Salem, a covered wagon stands in the moonlight facing west. To that wagon across the prairie comes Abe Lincoln.
Abe, I'm glad to see you.
Evening, Sam. I hear your boy is mighty sick.
Yes, he is. Aggie's tending him in the wagon now. She wants Preacher. That looks as if she'd given up, don't it?
Might be a comfort.
Why don't you speak a prayer, Abe? You could always think of something to say.
Afraid I'm not much of a hand at praying. I couldn't think of a blessed thing be any real comfort.
Never mind. Sit down, Abe.
So you're heading west, are you, sir? You're doing what you and I used to talk about. You're moving. How far are you going?
We're going right across the continent. All the way to Oregon.
Oregon.
We're going to free country, Abe.
How do you know it'll be free, sir? With the politicians selling the new territories piece by piece to the slave traders.
Because we'll keep it free if we have to fight for it. Even if we have to cut loose and make it a new country.
A new country? Yes, I remember Mentor Graham saying once that this country might be split up into hostile countries, just like Europe. It'd be a bad day for us Americans if we lost you and your wife and your son and all the others, like you said.
Seth, he's worse. He's moaning in his sleep. He's gasping for breath.
Don't cry, Aggie. The doctor will come soon.
Oh, it's so far from anyone, anything. Oh, Seth, what'll we do?
If you wish me to, Mrs. Gale, I'll try and speak a prayer.
We'd be grateful for anything you might say, Abe.
Oh, God, the Father of all living. I ask you to look with gentle mercy on this little boy here, lying sick in this covered wagon. His people are traveling far to seek a new home in the wilderness. To do your work, God, to make this earth a good place for your children to live in. They can see clearly where they're going, and they're not afraid to face all the perils that lie along the way. I humbly beg you not to take this child from them. Grant him the freedom of life. Let him know the sight of great plains and high mountains, of green valleys and wide rivers. For this little boy is an American, and these things belong to him and he to them. Spare him that he too may strive for the ideal for which his fathers have labored so faithfully and for so long. Spare him and give him his father's strength. Give us all strength, O God, to do the work that is before us. I ask you this favor in the name of your son, Jesus Christ, who died upon the cross to set men free.
Miss Todd?
Yes?
Mr. Lincoln is here.
Mr. Lincoln?
Will you see him, Miss Todd?
Yes. Ask him to come in.
This way, Mr. Lincoln.
I'm glad to see you again, Mr. Lincoln.
Thank you, Mary. You may well wonder why I have thrust myself on your mercy in this manner.
I'm sure you're always welcome. We heard through Joshua Speed you'd been very ill. We've all been greatly concerned.
You've been most kind.
I'm glad you're restored to health. Now you'll return to your work, or perhaps you have other plans.
I have no plans, Mary. I only want to tell you that I'm sorry for things that I said on that unhappy occasion that was to have been our wedding day.
You needn't worry about that. Whatever happened then was my own fault. I was blinded by my self-confidence. I loved you, Abe, and I believed I could make you love me, that I could inspire you to become the leader of men I believe you are. I didn't think you'd turn that strength against me.
Mary, I know now I was wrong. I presume again to ask you to be my wife.
Abe.
I know that taking me back would involve humiliation for you.
I'm not afraid of humiliation, Abe. What has brought about this change of heart?
On the prairie, I met an old friend who was moving west with his wife and child. He asked me to go with him after the child recovered, and I was strongly tempted to do so.
Abe.
But even then, I knew that that was not my direction. The way I must go is the way you have always wanted me to go.
And you will never again falter or try to run away?
I promise you, Mary, that if you will have me, I shall devote myself for the rest of my days to trying to do what is right, as God gives me the power to see what is right.
Then I shall be your wife. I shall fight by your side till death do us part. Oh, Abe. Abe, I love you. I love you. Whatever becomes of the two of us, I'll die loving you.
All right, that is part three of the Lux Radio Theater presentation of Abe Lincoln in Illinois from 1940, starring Raymond Massey. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. What did you get me for Valentine's Day, Lisa?
Well, it's not Valentine's Day yet, so I can't tell you.
It's coming up Wednesday.
Well, I like to give a surprise.
What is it going to be?
Come on,
you can tell me.
A surprise box. I've got some Twilight Zone CDs, some classic radio CDs, and I've got movies on DVD.
I'll bring you something for Valentine's. So next Saturday, Shantae and you and Roger.
Well, I never say no to a present.
And Esmeralda.
Right?
I'm going to bring you all.
I never say no.
Valentine's.
Do you want to know what I want?
Yeah. Dark chocolate.
Oh, is it food? Does it have to be food?
Well, I'm not going to buy you like
go to Nordstrom
jewelry
or something.
No, just
something from Nordstrom.
Oh, what about like some candy, you know?
No, I don't
Valentine's
need that.
Candy.
Yeah, I work out every other day and I just don't need that.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Something.
You know what I like?
Something.
Chunkies.
Yeah, I don't care.
It's my favorite
that.
Candy.
No.
Chunky.
No. I know that. I saw it today at the store. But
and you didn't buy it?
I thought of you, though.
Wow, thanks.
You're welcome.
That helped. You know, that would keep me warm right now.
Instead, I brought you apples sliced up and
nice.
Some sparkling water.
Right.
You should thank me.
My
I saved you from about 250 calories right there.
Chunky.
Yeah.
I would eat one right now.
I think if you were going to bring me something special, it would be
taffy apple.
With chocolate on it.
All right.
Like a chocolate caramel apple.
I'm going to bring some. Valentine's presents.
Okay, with dark chocolate.
Okay.
You got it.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Are you ready for the conclusion, Lisa?
Yes, part four of the Lux Radio Theater.
Yes, Abe Lincoln in Illinois. Here is the conclusion.
In the years that followed his marriage, Abe Lincoln walked the path that Mary Todd had dreamed of, climbed step by step, until at last in a series of debates with Stephen A. Douglas, he emerged into national prominence, the champion of liberty and union.
There can be no distinction in the definition of liberty as between one section and another, one race and another, one class and another. A house divided against itself cannot stand. This government cannot endure permanently. Half slave and half free.
What time is it now, Mary?
It's nearly 4:30. What?
You hear that, Abe? Those men will be coming here any minute.
Oh, they will. I almost forgot.
What men? Oh, who, Abe?
Just some men from the East. One of them's a political leader named Cremins, and there's Mr. Stervison. He's a man of...
Henry D. Stervison?
That's the one, and also the Reverend Dr. Barrick from Boston.
What are they coming here for?
Well, I don't precisely know, but I presume it's to see if I'm fit to be a candidate for President of the United States.
Why...
I suppose they want to find out if we still live in a log cabin and keep pigs under the bed.
And you didn't tell me.
I'm sorry, Mary. The matter just slipped my mind.
You forgot to tell me that we're having the most important guest who ever crossed the threshold of my house.
They're not guests, Mary. They're just here on business.
Yes, rather important business, it seems to me. They want to see us as we are, crude, sloppy, vulgar, Western barbarians, living in a house that reeks of foul tobacco smoke.
We can explain about having a son at Harvard.
If I'd only known, if you'd only given me a little time to prepare for them, why didn't you put on your best suit and those filthy old boots?
Well, Mary, I clean forgot.
I declare, Abraham Lincoln, I believe you would have treated me with more consideration if I'd been your slave instead of your wife. You've never for one minute stopped to think that perhaps I have some interest, some concerns in the life we lead together.
All right, Mary, I'll try to clean up my boots a little.
You've seen it all, Joshua Speed. Every bit of it. Courtship, if you could call it that. Change of heart, change back again in marriage. 18 years of it. And you probably think, just as all the others do, that I'm a bitter, nagging woman. I've tried to kill his spirit, drag him down to my level.
Oh, Mary, I think no such thing. Remember, I know Abe, too.
There never could have been another man such as he is. All these years, I've tried and tried to show him the way. And all my efforts have been like so many puny waves dashing against the rock of ages. And now opportunity... The greatest opportunity is coming here to him, right into his own house. And what can I do about it? He must take it. He must see that this is what he was meant for. But I can't persuade him to it. I'm tired. I'm tired to death. I thought I could help to shape him as I knew he should be. And I've succeeded in nothing but in breaking myself.
Gentlemen, gentlemen. Mr. Lincoln, you will forgive us, I'm sure, if we come directly to the point.
Yes, sir. I understand that you wish to inspect the prairie politician in his native lair, and here I am.
Mr. Lincoln, it is no secret that we are desperately in need of a candidate. One who is sound, conservative, safe, and clever enough to skate over the thin ice of the forthcoming campaign. Your friends believe that you are the man.
Well, Mr. Stervison, I can only tell you that when I was first considered for political office, that was in New Salem 25 years ago, I assured my sponsors of my conservatism. I have subsequently proved it by never progressing anywhere.
Then you agree that you are the man we want?
I'm afraid I can't go quite that far in self-esteem, Dr. Barry.
Please understand that this is not an inquisition. We merely wish to know you better. To gain a clearer idea of your theories on economics, religion, national affairs in general. To begin with, in one of your memorable debates with Senator Douglas, your opponent indulged in some of his usual demagoguery about industrial conditions in the North. And you replied shrewdly that...
Yes, I remember the occasion. I replied that I was thankful that laborers in free states have the right to strike, violently if need be, against authority that is unjust or oppressive. The Boston Tea Party was a kind of strike. So was the revolution itself.
All perfectly true. But the days of anarchy are over. To put it bluntly, would you, if elected, place the interests of labor above those of capital?
I cannot answer that bluntly or any other way, because I cannot tell what I should do if elected.
But we of New England are most anxious to know whether you admit one authority to whom devotion is unquestioned.
I presume you refer to the Almighty.
I do.
I think there can be no doubt as to my submission to his will.
I'm afraid there is a great deal of doubt as to your devotion to his church.
I realize that, Doctor. They say I'm an atheist because I've always refused to become a church member.
What have been the grounds of your refusal?
My own form of worship is obedience to the Savior's own statement of law and gospel. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind.
and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself.
Like in Pennsylvania, Madam.
There's nothing to worry about, Mary. It's safe for Abe. In fact, you needn't worry at all.
Yes, you've been saying that over and over again all evening. There's no need to worry. But how can we help worrying when every new bulletin shows Douglas ahead?
But every one of them shows Abe gaining.
Just give them time to count all the votes in New York, and then you'll be on your way to the White House.
Why don't they hurry with it? Why don't the returns come in?
They'll come in soon enough.
Any news, Billy?
Not yet. Lots of reporters down there, Mr. Lincoln. They want to know what'll be your first official action after you're elected.
What do you want us to tell them, Abe?
Tell them I'm thinking of growing a beard.
A beard?
Whatever put that idea into your mind?
I had a letter the other day from some little girl that ought to have whiskers to give me more dignity. I'll need it if elected.
Bulletin, Mr. Edwards?
Here, give it here.
What do they say now? Is there anything new from New York?
Connecticut. Abe far in the lead. Missouri. Douglas, 35,000.
What are they cheering for?
I don't know.
16, Lincoln, 8.
Listen to this clip. The Chicago Times says Lincoln breaks down. Lincoln's heart fails him. His tongue fails him. His legs fail him. He fails all over. People refuse to support him. They laugh at him. Douglas is champion of the people. Douglas skins the living dog.
I can't stand it any longer.
Yes, my dear. I think you better go home. I'll be back for long.
I won't go home. You only want to be rid of me. That's what you wanted ever since the day we were married and before that. Anything to get me out of your sight because you hate me. And it's the same with all of you, all of his friends. You hate me. You wish I'd never come into his life.
No, Mary.
Josh, will you please step out for a moment?
Certainly, Abe.
Why did you do that? Why do you take every opportunity you can to make a public fool out of me and yourself? It's bad enough when you act like that in the privacy of our own home, but here in front of people. You're not to do that again, do you hear me? You're never to do that again.
Abe. Abe.
I lost my temper, Mary, and I'm sorry. But I still think you should go home rather than endure the strain of this death watch.
This is the night I dreamed about when I was a child. When I was an excited young girl and all the gay young gentlemen of Springfield were courting me. And I fell in love with the least likely of them. This is the night when I'm waiting to hear that my husband has become president of the United States. And even if he does, it's ruined for me. It's too late.
Yes, I think so, gentlemen. Mr. Lincoln, there's a bulletin from New York. Douglas, 183,000. Lincoln, 181,000.
Look out, Abe, you're catching up.
Congratulations, Mr. Lincoln. The next bulletin from New York will show you in the lead. We've fought the good fight and we've won.
Seems to me the battle is just beginning, Mr. Sturgeon. Down in South Carolina, they raised 10,000 volunteers. They're arming them. The governor has issued a proclamation that if I'm elected, South Carolina will secede tomorrow. And every other state south of the Dixon line will secede with it. Can you see what that means? It means war. Civil war.
Here it is! Lincoln is elected! Honest Abe is our next president!
Stand back. Get back, please. Come on. Come on, Abe. Through here.
There he is. There's Abe Lincoln.
You'd better say something to them, Abe.
My dear friend, I have to say goodbye to you now. I'm leaving for Washington with my new whiskers, of which I hope you approve. No one not in my situation can appreciate my feelings of sadness at this parting. To this place and the kindness of you people, I owe everything. I have lived here for a quarter of a century and passed from a young to an old man. Here my children have been born and one is buried. I now leave, not knowing when or whether ever I may return. I am called upon to assume the presidency.
At a moment when 11 of our sovereign states have announced their intention to secede from the Union, and threats of war increase in fierceness from day to day, it is a grave duty which I now face. In preparing for it, I have tried to inquire what great principle or ideal it is that has kept this Union so long together. And I believe that it was not the mere matter of separation of the colonies from the motherland, but that sentiment in the Declaration of Independence, which gave liberty to the people of this country and hope to all the world. That sentiment was the fulfillment of an ancient dream which men have held through all time. A dream that one day they might shake off their chains and find freedom in the brotherhood of life. We gain democracy. Now there is doubt whether it is fit to survive. Perhaps we have come to the dreadful day of awakening. The dream is ended. If so, I am afraid it must be ended forever. I cannot believe that ever again will men have the opportunity that we have had. Perhaps we should concede that and admit that our ideals of liberty and equality are decadent and doomed. I have heard of an Eastern monarch who once charged his wise men to invent him a sentence which should be true and appropriate at all times and situations. They presented him with the words, "And this too shall pass away." That's a comforting thought in times of affliction. "And this too shall pass away." Yet, let us believe that it is not true. Let us live to prove that we can cultivate the natural world around us and the intellectual and moral world within us, so that we may secure an individual, social, and political prosperity whose course shall be forward, and which, while this earth endures, shall not pass away. I commend you to the care of the Almighty, as I hope in your prayers you may remember me. Goodbye, my friends and neighbors.
Abraham Lincoln goes on to Washington and his place in this democracy. Now Raymond Massey is returning to the microphone with Fay Bainter for a curtain call.
I'd like to join an audience from coast to coast in saluting Raymond Massey's fine performance as Abraham Lincoln.
Thank you, Fay. You've given us all so many very great moments in the theater that, well, I appreciate that more than I can say.
After playing the part 600 or 700 times, Mr. Massey, it's evident that you still like to do it.
I wanted to play Mr. Lincoln for about 20 years. When I was a boy, there was a friend of my father's who had talked to Mr. Lincoln, and he told me many stories about him over and over again. It always made him seem much more to me than just a picture in a history textbook. And I think in times like these, his story and himself has a new meaning not only for America, but for the whole world. Ever since I became an actor, I've been hoping that someone would write a play like Abe Lincoln in Illinois. Very fortunately, my old friend Robert Sherwood did so I had an inside track on the part. Just now, I'd like to say that I've enjoyed my first appearance in the Lux Radio Theater, and I hope very much it won't be the last.
We'll guarantee that with one hand and shake a warning finger at Fay Bainter with the other. A warning that our next vacation from this microphone is going to be very short.
Well, Mr. Mill, that's more than all right with me. Matter of fact, the product behind this radio theater is a regular part of my household. Lux Soap has been my complexion care for years, whether I've been working in Hollywood or working in the flower garden on my farm in New York State. To put it in a few words, I like it.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. You've made history of your own tonight. our sponsors, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Barbara Stanwyck and Robert Taylor in Smiling Through. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood. Heard in tonight's play were Ted Bliss as Billy Herndon, Doreen Tuttle as Anne Rutledge, Cy Kendall as Sturveson, Paula Nash as Mentor Graham, Wallace Taylor as Judge Bowling Green, Claire Vadera as Elizabeth Edwards, Earl Ross as Jack Armstrong, Lou Merrill as Ben, Verna Felton as Nancy, and Harry Humphrey and Marcella Powers. Faye Bainter will soon be seen in the picture Our Town. Otto Kruger's current picture is the Warner Brothers production Dr. Ehrlich's Magic Bullet. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers, and your announcer has been Melville Ruick. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is the Lux Radio Theater, hour-long presentation of Abe Lincoln in Illinois. That was from April 22nd, 1940, starring Raymond Massey, Faye Bainter, and Otto Kruger, as heard on CBS. Cecil B. DeMille doing the hosting and producing chores on that episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Yeah, Nick DiGilio is not going to be on tonight because something happened, I think. Nothing bad. Something with his apartment or...
He's got some kind of ice leaking or something with his roof, and he's got some weather-related issues. So we've got Dane Neal, who is filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning.
Dane is great. And you know what? I mean, if Dane couldn't have made it, we could have done Listen to Lisa. We could have had an emergency broadcast of Listen to Lisa.
One of these days we will, but you know, tonight we get to go home and go to sleep.
Just think, one of these times they're going to be like, okay, we need you to fill in, Lisa, and what? Go ahead. You've been talking about doing Listen to Lisa.
Well, it has to be Listen to Lisa and maybe Carl. You're forgetting
that half. Well, but you're the star of that.
You're my co-star.
I'll be your second banana.
That's right.
Or eighth banana or 12th banana.
That's right.
Yeah, because that's really all about you. And
no,
all
it's
your
actually,
master's degrees.
The funny thing is, it's not at all about me. It's all about the listeners.
Right.
That's the point.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do like a little segment.
We need a little test. We need a little demo. A demo.
Let's try it out. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, you know what? We're off now for what? 5 days? 6 days?
Feels like about half a minute. But when we come back on Saturday
night... What do we have
night,
when we come back?
Saturday, we have Dragnet, The Great Gildersleeve, and Murder at Midnight.
Ooh, that's a good lineup.
I know. On Sunday, we've got The Big Story, Duffy's Tavern, which is always a favorite.
Very funny stuff.
Philo Vance.
Oh, good detective. Wow. Good stuff, Lisa Wolf.
Yep, we make a good team.
You know, I'm working on something pretty, pretty fun to do here with our listeners. And has to do with a club, a classic radio club. Yeah. Would you want to join it?
Oh, I don't know. Tell me more, Carl.
Well, I'm working on it. You're going to see. Probably within a month or two, we're going to launch this whole new program where people could join a club. Huh? What do you think of
that? Well, it depends how much it costs, Carl.
Oh, no. It's not going to be. It's going to be.
Oh, no.
No, it's going to be.
It'll be.
It's going to be fun. You'll see.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. I'm working on it.
We've talked about it.
I've been working on it. Yeah, we're going to launch that maybe in the next couple of months.
Good.
Yeah, I would say probably we'll be ready to launch that. Let's see. This is February.
Spring?
I'd say March. Probably like April.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Sometime in April, maybe. Yeah.
Good.
You do your taxes and then join the club.
Great.
Right? All right, so that's good. What else did we talk about? We talked about Cat's Pride. You should definitely get your picture in of your kitty cat. Take a picture of your kitty and get it into us here because you could win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. You don't want to miss that. And we had a lot of nice texts from our listeners tonight. We got to play Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. We have six more next week.
Yes, we do.
Six more. What are some of the movies?
You want me to tell you?
Yeah.
All right.
What are some of the movies?
All right. We have the...
next week.
Life is Beautiful.
What's that? Life is Beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know that movie.
That's because it sounds too good for you. Because
it was probably a romantic drama.
Once Upon a Time in the West.
What?
Yep.
Once Upon a Time in the West. I don't know that movie.
We have Saving Private Ryan.
That one I know.
That one you know.
Tom Hanks.
That'll be Saturday. On Sunday, we have American History X.
Oh, yeah. Stacey Keach was in that.
Yep. We have Psycho.
Oh, man.
And
Psycho.
And we have Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Do you know when I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark as a kid, I remember I was probably in high school, and my friend Keith Hill was like, let's see this movie. I hear it's really good. And I was like, nah, I don't want to see that. That looks stupid. We went to the show and we saw it, and I was like blown out of my mind. That was such a great movie. Back then, the special effects, even today when you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, the special effects are great. But back then, like I'm talking about 1980 something, because that's when that movie came out, like probably like 81 or 82.
Yeah.
Maybe even earlier. Yes.
Yes. No, I was going to say that I saw Life is Beautiful, and it is an amazing movie. I wanted to look
Who's
up the year.
It?
It's from 1997.
Life is Beautiful. I don't know
was,
that movie.
It was at a Nazi concentration camp,
oh,
and the scene that I
right.
have is an amazing scene from
oh,
the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was during World War II.
Yeah.
It was an amazing movie. I'm trying to see who was in it. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But
well,
it was a very special movie.
The people
movie.
That were in it remember.
Yes, I would hope so.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. We're going to go home. It's probably warmer in
outside.
My car.
I'll say it's warmer outside
than it is in
here.
The Igloo Studios
yeah.
here.